Hi, and welcome to Your Health Quickly, a Scientific American podcast series.
On this show, we highlight the latest vital health news, discoveries that affect your body and your mind. Every episode, we dive into one topic. We discuss diseases, treatments, and some controversies.
And we demystify the medical research and ways you can use to stay healthy. I'm Tanya Lewis.
I'm Josh Fishman.
We're Scientific American's senior health editors. On today's show, the official COVID public health emergency ended this month. What will that mean to you? Will it change how you get vaccines, tests, and treatments? Will it change how much you pay for them? And how will you hear warnings about new COVID waves?
The COVID pandemic isn't over, but many of the official emergencies are. A few weeks ago, the U.S. government ended its public health emergency, which has been in place since early 2020. And the World Health Organization announced the disease, quote, no longer constitutes a public health emergency of international concern.
It's important to keep in mind that the virus still poses a threat. In the middle of May, about 4,000 people per day were being hospitalized with COVID in the U.S., and more than 800 were dying each week. But the end of the U.S. public health emergency indicates those numbers have dropped a lot from the time when thousands died every day. And those counts continue to go down. Tentatively, I'd say we're trending in the right direction.
I was wondering, though, if the U.S. declaration is going to change everyone's access to things that people still need. Take vaccines and COVID tests. For years, the vaccines have been free, and so have most rapid home tests. The emergency let the government set rules on prices and insurance coverage. I don't know if that's going to change now. Fortunately, we do know someone who can tell us.
Indeed. Our colleague, Lauren Young, SIAM's associate health editor, just wrote a story on this exact subject. So we asked her to come on the show and bring everyone up to speed. Hi, Lauren.
Hey, Tanya. Hey, Josh.
Welcome to Your Health Quickly. It's great to have you here.
It's really great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, jumping right in, can you tell us what ending the public health emergency is going to do to COVID health treatments? What's going to happen to vaccines to start with?
Right. So those shots are a really big deal. COVID vaccines absolutely improved people's protection against the virus and changed the course of the pandemic. Ever since they were made available in 2021, they have been completely free for everyone who wanted one, regardless of whether you had insurance or the type of insurance you had. This is because the federal government has purchased nearly 2 billion doses of COVID vaccines and 171 million bivalent boosters. Those are the ones that are formulated to cover Omicron strains. So healthcare providers can't deny any eligible person a vaccine or booster purchased on the government's dime, and they can't charge you any out-of-pocket costs.
That's great news. So there's a stockpile, essentially. But what happens when that runs out?
Well, if the government decides not to replenish it, then any cost you may have to pay will depend on your insurance. People on most private insurances and certain Medicare programs should still be able to receive vaccines from in-network providers with no out-of-pocket costs. Medicaid members will have their vaccines covered without copays through September 30th, 2024. That's also true for any future boosters recommended by the CDC.
Say I didn't have insurance. What might I have to pay?
Right. Well, so Pfizer and Moderna, two of the major vaccine developers, have hinted that commercial prices would be between $110 and $130 per dose. That's about 3 to 4 times higher than the discounted rate the government paid per dose. There is some good news, though, for people without insurance. The Health and Human Services Department announced a $1.1 billion program to continue to provide COVID vaccines, along with certain antiviral treatments like Paxlovid, to people who don't have insurance. That money is expected to last through December 2024.
Okay, now I have private insurance, a group plan through SIAM. You think I won't have to pay anything if there's, say, a new fall booster shot? Not even those $20 copays I sometimes have to fork over for prescriptions?
Right. So I had the same exact question because I'm on that same plan. So we won't have to pay anything, even copays, for the vaccine or future boosters, as long as we get them from an in-network provider. COVID vaccines will likely transition to a seasonal program, so coverage would be similar to your typical flu vaccine. The experts I spoke to suspect many other private insurance companies are going to do the same thing.
Is the same thing true for treatments like Paxlovid?
Pretty much. So the government also stocked up on these drugs and medications, which will continue to be free for people no matter what your insurance status is. But again, once those supplies run out, your insurance will have to cover the price.
I've heard that many private health insurers have already stopped covering all of the out-of-pocket costs for COVID hospital visits and treatments. They're basically treating COVID like any other disease.
Yeah, that's totally right. But people on government insurance programs with drug coverage, like Medicare or Medicaid, they won't have to pay anything for a while. Medicare will be free indefinitely, while Medicaid will make treatments free until September 30th, 2024. And then coverage will be determined by state.
Let's talk about COVID tests. I've been getting free at-home antigen tests from the government through the mail. I also got free ones from my local library, and my insurance plan paid for some that I picked up at the drugstore. But now all of that's changing. Private insurance companies are no longer required to cover at-home tests and lab tests.
Yeah, so it's really up to your insurance plan. They decide whether costs will continue to be covered completely or if you'll have to pay any or all of the fees. COVID tests will likely be treated similarly to other screening tests like your blood sugar or your cholesterol tests.
If you're uninsured, you've probably been paying for COVID tests out of pocket already, even before the public health emergency ended.
Yeah, that started in the middle of last year when a lot of the COVID relief funds and reimbursement programs began to end.
So my understanding is that Medicaid is different because each state has its own program. Those programs should cover tests without charge until September 30th, 2024, and then after that, it'll depend on what states decide. For Medicare recipients, if your doctor or healthcare provider orders a COVID PCR test, that will still be covered. At-home tests, though, are a different story.
They are. So for a home test, Medicare members will have to pay like people with private insurance. I did some price checking. At most drugstores and retailers, at-home testing kits range between $10 and $40.
So my insurance won't pay for any of that?
Yeah, that's right. In general, you can probably expect to spend more out of pocket on these tests than you did before.
I have a bunch of tests at home, but a couple are close to the expiration date on the package.
You know, they actually might still be good. The FDA has extended the shelf life on many tests after finding out that they retain their accuracy for longer periods. You can check for new dates on the FDA website. You just have to search for COVID-19 diagnostic tests.
One other thing I've been very interested in as the emergency ends is how we're going to track COVID levels. The CDC has been emphasizing your level of community exposure as a way to figure out how careful to be. If there was a peak in cases or a certain level of hospitalizations, consider wearing a high-quality mask in crowded indoor spaces and stuff like that. But the CDC is changing what it reports now, right? It won't ask local health departments to report positive test rates, transmission levels, and total cases.
That's right. The CDC has been one of the major sources of COVID case data, but it's now going to lean on COVID death rates, emergency room data, and hospital admissions for its primary national surveillance measurements. This is partly because some of the data for case rates were sort of unreliable. They became questionable when people began using more widely available at-home COVID tests. The CDC says weekly COVID hospitalization rates are better indicators of local outbreaks at this point.
Okay, so where can people find those local hospitalization numbers?
Local city and state public health departments have this information. You can also find hospitalizations by county and state on the CDC's COVID data tracker.
And there's another place to search for outbreak warnings, the sewer. Epidemiologist Caitlin Jedalina recently suggested in her newsletter that people follow local and regional wastewater trends, and that data will still be coming in. Wastewater analysis is a really strong tool for identifying and tracking variants and monitoring transmission.
It's a really good idea. Wastewater numbers measure the amount of the COVID-causing virus found in sewage, which is a pretty good proxy for the number of infected people. So if numbers are going up in your area, you should probably start taking precautions like masking.
Yeah, I think that's pretty sound advice. You can find COVID wastewater surveillance data on the CDC's data tracker.
That's really good to know. In fact, all in all, I feel like I know a lot more than I did 10 minutes ago.
Me too. And if you want even more info, check out Lauren's story online at siam.com. Great talking with you, Lauren.
Thanks so much for having me.
Your Health Quickly is produced by Talika Bose, Jeff Delvisio, and Kelso Harper. It's edited by Ella Fetter and Alexa Lim. Our music is composed by Dominic Smith.
Our show is part of Scientific American's podcast, Science Quickly. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, give us a rating or review. And if you have ideas for topics we should cover, send us an email at yourhealthquickly@siam.com. That's yourhealthquickly@siam.com.
And don't forget to go to siam.com for updated and in-depth health news.
I'm Tanya Lewis.
I'm Josh Fishman.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.